Ireland's capital and largest city is a delight to visit, no matter if your family came from Ireland or not. Dublin steals the show with its exceptional arts, entertainment, food, and fun, with an emphasis on literature. We're getting an update from our guides Joe Burke and Lynn Corkin right now on what you should add to your itinerary, whether it's your first time in Dublin or whether you've been coming back and back and back. Joe and Lynn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just get a sense that you enjoy showing people around Dublin. Tell me just a little bit of background, Joe, on your guiding and why Dublin fits for your guiding sort of passions.
Well, I guess I worked in Italy as a guide, so I developed a big interest in history. Then I also do a lot of architectural photography. Dublin is quite a beautiful Georgian city. I photograph a lot of Georgian buildings and kind of Palladian architecture. And also that architecture is a leftover from colonization.
I was going to say, that was from when Dublin was the second city of Great Britain.
Absolutely,
it?
Yeah.
And all this English style, neoclassical or Palladian.
Yeah. And that's amazing because in the 70s, people in Dublin didn't really respect that because it was a metaphor for colonization
and
subjugation. And it wasn't until a group of architectural students that were studying architecture in Dublin that kind of barricaded themselves into these buildings and said, no, you shouldn't knock these.
Right.
And that was the start of the Royal Georgian Society.
Hey, Lynn, how about you? Tell us about where you're from and your guiding and
yes,
your take on Dublin.
I'm from Northern Ireland, so I hadn't been a lot to Dublin in my younger years, maybe for the occasional concert. But now I go a lot as part of my work. And it's a completely different atmosphere from Belfast. It's twice the size for a start. It's much more cosmopolitan. It's much more centre of administration and government rather than that great industrial heritage that Belfast would have. So it has a completely different character. It has beautiful architecture, the Georgian architecture that Joe has just mentioned. Huh. That is just not so prevalent in Belfast because of its different history. So it really feels somewhere different to me, different from what I would have grown up with, and has restaurants and a variety of people, food, culture, and just that cosmopolitan feel.
Now, when you talk about, I mean, this is a discussion about Dublin, but I think with the new trains, the fast trains and so on, Dublin and Belfast, people should remember, complement each other, and they're very easy to connect by train.
Mm.
They are, and we're about to get a super new railway station in Belfast that's going to have an hourly service to Dublin, all singing, all dancing. New railway station called Grand Central, and it is a reflection of the demand that there is now from Belfast to Dublin both ways.
That's a constructive, healthy thing.
It absolutely is. It's a benefit of the peace process. There's no question about it.
Peace for stability and prosperity. Let's get to know each other.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, when we're in Dublin, what would you say is the proper smart approach for a tourist who might be overwhelmed with all the things to do, Joe?
Well, just in 2019, a new Museum of Literature opened in Dublin, and it's got really favourable reviews. And in many ways, the building was the first building ever to be built on St. Stephen's Green. So it is also a metaphor for colonisation. But it's an ideal opportunity if you want to go in and see how these amazing houses were with the Italian stucco work. It's a unique opportunity to see the inside of these houses. Then this museum is dedicated to James Joyce, and Ireland has always had a very difficult relationship with Joyce because, of course, he was quite explicit in his kind of outspoken way of the Catholic Church. And he, you know, being one of the great literary writers of the 20th century, Ireland has always had a kind of a fractured relationship
with Joyce.
That's right,
because a lot of that is from the time when Dublin was really quite British.
Absolutely, yeah.
In fact, when we have that phrase, beyond the pale, that means where all the barbarians are. And
yeah,
that was literally, there was a region of Ireland which was civilized and English and proper.
Yes.
And then beyond, I don't know what the pale is, but that must have been some kind of border. And beyond that were the angry indigenous people.
Absolutely. It was like Hadrian's Wall. The pale was a flat area of land outside Dublin, and anything beyond that pale was totally barbaric. It was the native indigenous people.
Yeah.
And, of course, when you colonize people as well, you have to demonize them. So you know, there's a whole process with all of that colonization. So you have to be the bringer of civility.
Civility, yes. You know, you bring them a good Protestant approach to God.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Well, we've got this positive sort of spirit now where we are grappling with the past and we are celebrating the literature heritage.
Absolutely.
The museum you're talking about, is that the one named Molly or something?
Molly, yeah. Museum Molly. Of Modern Literature. And it's dedicated to Molly Bloom. And since then, it's become... they've kind of extended the whole idea of this museum that it will be for all great new and upcoming writers as well.
So that's great. So a general celebration of Irish literature.
Absolutely, yeah. Right,
because there's the Writer's House also. Well, that was quite there, nice in the past.
Yes, but that has since hasn't reopened since COVID.
Okay, so this is the new version of that. That's great. And Joe, you said that it was on St. Stephen's Green. This is the beautiful green. It's a big green square surrounded by beautiful architecture at the top of Grafton Street.
Grafton Street, that's
and
it.
To me, Grafton Street is the strolling boulevard of Dublin.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you go downhill from there to Trinity College.
Yes.
And then across O'Connell Bridge. And then up O'Connell Street.
Up O'Connell Street.
And in a lot of ways, that's the spine of Dublin, I think you could say.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's where all the historical kind of buildings are. It's also where all our national kind of heroes are, like Daniel O'Connell on O'Connell Street.
Yeah.
And the other thing with this museum is they have a fantastic private garden out the back, and they have a beautiful bookshop downstairs.
Yep.
And then they have this lovely eatery where they serve like sourdough bread and really high quality food.
I love that. I love what Dublin does to give it get the experience a little more experiential.
Yeah, in the sense it can cover a lot because the building was the first part of University College Dublin.
Uh-huh.
So at that time, there was just Trinity College, and that was ostensibly for English Protestant.
You could complement that visit, an elegant townhouse, with a visit to the Henrietta Museum.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can you explain to us the Henrietta Museum?
Well, the Henrietta Museum is a wonderful example of, I guess, the transition from the gentrified Dublin, when Dublin was the second city of the British Empire, and then these houses that were very grand and beautifully built turned into the worst slums of Europe after the famine.
And that's where you get this very gritty reality,
at
the hardship of the Irish people in tough times. You can see that in this museum. It's remarkable how well preserved it is.
It's incredible. The one thing, though, if you are booking this museum, you do have to book about a week in advance because they only take very small groups. And the tour is really intimate. And when you go into the old parts of the buildings, you can see the apartments just as they were. So it's a really authentic experience.
You guys know how to travel. And that's what we want to inspire our listeners to do. I was, just... Before we went on our recording here, we were talking, you didn't fly from Ireland straight to Seattle. You stopped in New York for a week.
Absolutely.
And you told me all of the things you did in a week in New York, and you must have planned things in advance.
Oh, yes, yeah. And one of the things I planned and went to was the Tenement Museum in New York City.
There you go.
And there was various themed tours, and I chose to do the one which was called After the Famine.
Uh-huh.
And it featured the story of, an Irish emigrant to New York and her life and all that. And, you could see the similarities, the working class situation, whether it was New York or Dublin, is very similar. You know, these houses that had once been grand buildings for the upper classes were now like maybe 100 people on one corridor.
Well, a lot of times you look at a grand mansion once for an elegant aristocratic family, and you look at the doorbells today, and there's 8 doorbells, probably more. And that's just a reminder that it used to be for one family, now it's for 8. Our guides to Dublin are fresh in from Ireland and joining us on Travel with Rick Steves to let us know what's new to look for among the traditional pleasures of the Irish capital. Lynn Corkin is a frequent visitor on the train line in from Belfast. And Joe Burke lives just a few miles from the center of town in the suburbs of Dublin. So we're talking about Dublin, and there's a lot of tourism going to Dublin. It's sort of trendy these days.
Mm-hmm.
What should we know about booking in advance? Lynn, what would you say? Are there sites in Dublin that you should, if you're really hell-bent on seeing them, you should book them before you get there?
Yes, I think so. I mean, from the big, big names like the Book of Kells, it has to be booked in advance to these smaller places that we're talking about. I mean, Joe was just
like
talking
Henrietta
Street, the Little Museum of Dublin, which is also on St. Stephen's Green. You know, these are very small buildings that tell a really big story. I know it's a cliche, but they do.
And they learned during COVID how to control crowds. And I think now they're continuing this because they realized, hey, we can control the crowds.
And they realize that people get a better experience with a smaller number. So, I would always say book in advance. I mean,
it really makes two kinds of travelers, those who fumble around without planning in advance, and they have a good time. Mm. And those who are the good students that recognize if you really want to do this and this and this, you do a little bit of planning. You send a few emails. You pay for things in advance. You build a schedule. You don't need a fancy tour guide. You just need to be your own tour guide and get your hands on this information. By the way, Lynn, you mentioned the Book of Kells. I understand that the Trinity College Old Library is being restored now.
Yes.
So there's an exhibit that, I mean, people go to Dublin just to see the Book of Kells.
Yeah, you can, yes.
Tell us what the Book of Kells is and how we see it now.
The Book of Kells is an illustrated manuscript by monks in the 7th century. It was done on the island of Iona, but the book itself, the precious book, was taken to protect it from marauding Vikings. And it's now this exhibition is being restored. You can still see the Book of Kells. But the library, which is also a major attraction at Trinity College, they're actually decanting the books, and each book is going to be individually restored. So they have put on what I think is a very good interactive exhibition all about the Book of Kells, all about great literary figures, because the library really is not the same experience because a lot of the books have gone. You still get to go through it, but they're trying to compensate for...
Okay, so there is an experience while the library is closed.
While the library is closed.
And it's called the Book of Kells Experience.
It is, and do you agree, Joe? I think it's very popular with, the add-on experience seems to be popular in films about the Book of Kells.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose when you still go up to the library, you still get that haptic quality, but the smell of the books is gone. But also, I guess they learned from Notre Dame, you know, they had to make this fire safe as well, this building. So, and deworming all the books and all that process. So it's going to take a 3-year process, but not unlike what they did in, I know this is abstract, but in Florence, you know, when they had the flood and they realized just the importance of how that became a center for knowledge about painting repair.
Well, it's a responsibility if you have this patrimony.
Absolutely.
You take care of it.
Yeah.
And that was a big sort of a thoughtful takeaway from the Notre Dame fire.
Yes.
Is we've got to get our act together. We're going to have more fires in the grand churches of Europe. And, you know, they take a little bit of a restoration on a place like Trinity College and you see, oh, it's got worms or whatever. And we've got to do more and more and more. And suddenly it's closed for 3 or 4 years. But thank goodness they're taking the big tourist draw and putting it in a special exhibit in the interim.
Absolutely. And the books will be digitized for prosperity, but it's still such a beautiful experience to walk up in that room. The aesthetic quality of that room is sublime.
Irish guides Joe Burke, who lives in the Dublin suburbs, and Lynn Corkin, who comes from Belfast in the north, are updating us on things to do and enjoy in Dublin right now on Travel with Rick Steves. So we just got a couple of minutes left, and there are some cool museums and experiences that really help the traveler put the flesh and bones on epic kind of slices of Irish history. We've got the famine ship, we've got the emigration museum, we've got the general post office with the Civil War and so on. Can you talk a little bit about these attractions that really make learning Irish history vivid and thought-provoking?
I think epic is a wonderful example of that, meaning every person is connected.
And this is the Irish Immigration Museum.
Yes. Yeah.
Considering that Ireland has one of the greatest diasporas of any society.
Absolutely. And it was the CEO of Coca-Cola, Worldwide Coca-Cola. He wanted to tell the story of Irish migration because it had never been told before. So out of his pension fund, he bought that beautiful Victorian building.
Yeah.
And using like high digital experiences that were from, I think Emerson did the contract for it. And now it's become a major tourist attraction. And like the Walk to Santiago, you can get a stamp, like a passport stamp that you've gone through all of these places. And
that's a powerful experience, a beautiful state-of-the-art kind of exhibit.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Then you've got the something that's not high-tech, but it's quite a powerful experience, especially for families, the replica of the famine ship.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that, Lynn?
Yes, I took my nieces on it, who were about 10 at the time, and it brought it home to them. This is how people travelled.
And there's people role-playing. You go down into the hold, yes, and you've got these ladies that have sick children and they can't get their food and they're...
But for kids who are used to flying to America, you know, this is how they went in this... you know, little ship that's about the size of this table, and I think it's perfectly located right opposite Epic, because this is how people travelled, and Ireland's greatest export was its people.
Its people. And coming right up that, you've got that powerful modern art statues of these famine victims.
Yes.
That like ghosts walking along
Absolutely.
The harbour front.
And it's
so
like
moving.
Giacometti, that famous
Giacometti,
Swiss, and they're Giacometti-esque, but then it, just even that duality, the dog, like in Renaissance art, was a sign of fidelity, but here the dog is a sign of death and how close death is to these people.
Wow. Yep.
Oh my goodness. So I think for any town, the more you bring to the experience, the more context you have, the more you know what your options are, the more you've done your homework and you've made your reservations, the better experience you're going to have. When you go to Dublin, for me, one of the highlights is a little bit of music. I'd love to close our discussion just with your best suggestion about how a visitor can really enjoy the music in the capital city of Dublin.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's one of the unique social spaces we have in Ireland is the pub. The Italians have the piazza. We have the pub. So that's where all our subconscious socialization is done. And in lots of pubs around Dublin, they have traditional Irish music and it's really impromptu. It's very informal and it's a very kind of open platform to meet people and just integrate.
And there's the famous ones, the Brazen Head.
The Brazen Head, O'Donoghue's.
And they're good. You go there and they're just good
absolutely.
Music, solid musicians. It's free. You just buy a beer and you have yourself a great evening.
Absolutely. And usually you can spark up a conversation with somebody listening to the music.
Yeah.
So it's
what a pub's all about.
Absolutely, yeah.
So and Lynn, I remember Riverdance was all the rage and a lot of people still go to Dublin and they want a little bit of Riverdance. Anything like that going on in Dublin?
I go every year to see Riverdance.
Yeah.
I love it and there's nowhere else to see it but Ireland. It's just such, it's nearly a patriotic act to go to see Riverdance, you know, and it's quite international, I think, as well. I know it sounds corny, but the dancing is superb. They also have, you know, a sort of like tap dance feature. You know, the Irish guys arrive in New York and here's the Puerto Ricans and it's a bit West Side Story-ish. But the audience love it and I love it and I encourage my tour members to go because they say, oh, I saw it in Michigan. No, you haven't seen it in Dublin.
There's a lot to be said for that.
There really is.
You want to see Riverdance in Dublin.
That's it,
This has been such a delight talking to both of you, Joe Burke and Lynn Corkin. Best wishes with your guiding
and
happy travels.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, Rick.
We've got more to help you plan a trip to Dublin, including our suggestions for a walking tour of the city. It's at ricksteves.com. Have you ever planned a special trip to view the art you love in person? Tell us about it. We'll check in with listeners on Art Adventures next at 877-333-7425. It's Travel with Rick Steves.